The name of this session is Adult Children of Alcoholics, and my name is Rich Anderson, and I have two people coming to say some things. Sue and Melissa, here they are. And I thought to begin with, I'd preface the topic by giving you some general kind of information, and then Melissa and Sue wanted to say a few things about their experience, and I would guess there's other people in the audience that have had similar kinds of experiences and have things they want to share. So we want to give everybody a chance to share their experiences, to talk about things, and obviously to discuss and ask questions back and forth. I run a chemical dependency treatment program back in Minnesota, and I know 5-10 years ago they were saying that there was more than a million alcoholics in the United States, and at that time they were saying that every alcoholic adversely affects at least 4 other people. So there were at least 4 million adversely affected people as a result of being in a relationship of some sort with the 1 million alcoholics. And at that time, I know they were saying that that gives you 5 million people adversely affected in the United States by the disease of alcoholism alone, to say nothing about other drugs. And it was my understanding back then that that roughly was the population of the whole country of Mexico. So 5 to 10 years ago, the problem was fairly significant. My hunch is that it's gotten worse. Recently, and by recently I mean probably the last 10 years, the field has become more and more aware not only of treating alcoholism and drugs, but also treating codependency, and that is the adult affected other people, especially spouses. Recently in Minnesota, we're starting now to identify adolescent codependents and begin to treat them, and it's a preventive way of keeping them from becoming chemically dependent. We're also finding that a high percentage of chemically dependent people are also codependent, and a major part of their successfully finding sobriety after chemical dependency treatment is to get codependency treatment. We're also finding now that a lot of people have grown up in homes with one or two parents or a grandparent or an uncle or somebody living in that home that they've had a close relationship with who's been drug dependent. And by drug dependent, I include alcohol as a drug. And the effect of growing up in those homes has also affected those people in many diverse kinds of ways. My hunch is there's no one particular pattern, but there seems to be a lot of similarities that happen to them. And I have been given from the ACOA, which is the Adult Children of Alcoholics group in our town, just a list of 14 different general characteristics that they found were common among adult children of alcoholics. And I thought what I'd do is read those and just give you a general span of the kind of things that are often seen. And then we'll let our two experts talk a little bit, and then we'll open it up for discussion. And just by personal relationship, I know there are other experts in the audience, so you're all welcome to share, too. Adult children of alcoholics seem to have several characteristics in common as a result of having been brought up in an alcoholic household. And I want to preface this by saying this doesn't mean that everybody has these characteristics. What this means is that many adult children of alcoholics experience some of these characteristics, but not all. Number one, we became isolated and afraid of people and authority figures. Number two, we became approval seekers and lost our identity in the process. Number three, we are frightened by angry people and any personal criticism. Number four, we either become alcoholics, marry them, or both, or find another compulsive personality, such as a workaholic, to fulfill our sick abandonment needs. Five, we live our lives from the viewpoint of victims and are attracted by that weakness in our love, friendship, and career relationships. 6, we have an overdeveloped sense of responsibility. It is easier for us to be concerned with others rather than ourselves, which enables us not to look too closely at our faults or our responsibilities to ourselves. 7, we get guilt feelings when we stand up for ourselves, so instead, we give in to others. 8, we become addicted to excitement. 9, we confuse love and pity and tend to love people we can pity and rescue. 10, we have stuffed our feelings from our traumatic childhoods and have lost the ability to feel or to express our feelings because it hurts too much. This includes our good feelings, such as joy and happiness. Our being out of touch with our feelings is one of our basic denials. 11, we judge ourselves harshly and have a very low sense of self-esteem. 12, we're dependent personalities who are terrified of abandonment. We'll do anything to hold on to relationships in order to avoid re-experiencing painful abandonment feelings we received from living with sick people who were not there emotionally for us. 13, alcoholism is a family disease. Some of us became codependents and took on the characteristics of that disease even though we may not have picked up the drink. And 14, codependents are reactors rather than actors. One of you want to start? Do you want to start, Sue, and just say a few things about your experience?
I grew up in an alcoholic home. My father was an alcoholic all through when I was growing up. But it never occurred to me that he was an alcoholic. Back when I was growing up, you didn't hear the word alcoholic. You didn't hear the word people drank like they do now, but it wasn't like it was ever talked about, and I thought my childhood was real normal. He came home from work every night about 6 o'clock, and he was real hyper. But I just thought all this was real normal behavior. He would go home, sit down, have a couple drinks, eat dinner, yell at all of his kids. Get upset if we talk back, which I did all the time. And then he'd go to his room, watch TV, and pass out at 9 o'clock. But I just thought that was normal. I thought he was tired because he had a really hard day at work. And I really was so naive to the problem. Even all through high school, I remember one time I was with some friends, and he was taking me someplace, and he was driving on the side of the road, or kind of on the other lane of the road, in the left lane. And my friend said, "My God, is your dad drunk?" And I said, "No, he's just being funny." And I guess I was just so hurt and just so, all of a sudden I realized, maybe he does drink. Maybe he does drink more than he should. But, you know, then I thought I grew up in a real, real normal situation. I had no idea that it was abnormal at all. Then I went to college, and when I came home from college, I saw this. I saw this problem that he was getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And I just couldn't deal with it any longer. I moved real far away from home, and I'm still living this far away from home. And since then, he is recovering now. He's been recovering for 7 years, and it's been good. But then I'm realizing that his alcohol affected, in the last like 4 years, I realized how much his alcohol affected me. All those things that Rich just read, I went to an ACO A meeting in Denver, and when I heard that same list of 14 characteristics, it was like, my God, I was affected that much. I do have a lot of those, the feeling of abandonment, of being lonely, of being addicted to excitement, a lot of those things are real typical in my behavior, and I guess I have a lot of anger inside because of what my dad did to me when I was a kid. I was really hurt by all the things that happened when I was a child, and I'm starting to dig up the past. I feel like I really need to go through a lot of those little things that happened and realize that it was my father's alcohol and not him. I hated my dad when I was growing up. I hated him. I hated everything about what happened. And I'm finally learning to love him. He's a wonderful person. But it's taken me quite a while. I'm still recovering from what's the term when I'm an adult, children, and I'm recovering? I don't know if this is term for that, but I feel like I'm really still recovering from my childhood, from growing up in an alcoholic family. So I have a brother that's also an alcoholic, and a grandfather, and an uncle. So I could write a lot of ways. Sure. I have a little bit different situation in that my parents were divorced when I was 9, and I lived with my mother. My dad is an alcoholic. And so he lived about 3 or 4 miles away. So we didn't live in the same home, but visited. And when we were small, when I was small, I don't think he was an alcoholic at that time. Just in the last 4 or 5 years, it's become a real problem. And I think the biggest thing that I struggle with is the whole enabling thing. You know, they talk about how the family behavior can enable the parent. And so when we did the intervention 2 years ago, where you confront the alcoholic, the family, the close members, and to try and urge them to go to treatment. And Dad went to treatment for a month and stayed dry for 6 months or so, and then started drinking again, and he's still drinking. That was 2 summers ago. And that's the time when we started learning all the language about enabling and all this stuff. And so that's what I still struggle with. Am I supposed to confront my dad every time I go home? And he's not a real good communicator, and neither am I with him. And have every time I go home be a bad situation, or just love him for who he is when he's sober and leave when I get upset when he's drunk? Or I had the same situation when I was real little with the car, and I still am angry about him driving through a red light and driving really irresponsibly, and he still does that. But there's nothing solved or anything yet, so I don't know if I'm going to really speak tonight, so I don't know what I'm saying.
Anybody else want to share some experiences or ask questions?
I have a question about one of those characteristics that you said, addictive to excitement. I was wondering if there's any reason behind that or something.
Want to say something about that? The question was, what do we mean by we become addicted to excitement?
I don't know. I guess in my home, this might have just been my home too. When my father came home drunk all the time, my family, the characteristics of my family were real hyper anyway, and so when he came home drunk, we were even more, because my mother was running into the cupboard to get him his gin tonics, and I was yelling at him because the biggest thing at the supper table was, eat your peas, I hate peas, eat your peas, go to your room if you're not going to eat peas. And I always thought that my dad hated me because I would never eat my peas, and it was nothing. And I guess because of all that excitement in my house, I just need excitement, I guess. You know, just same with that other characteristic, I need an addiction of some type, maybe, because I'm missing that from my home now, I don't know.
The other thing we know about it is that in an addictive family system, the addict has chosen the chemical as a form of distracting themselves from their own emotional pain or their own problems. And modeling the behavior of distracting away from the issues happens a lot. And so family members also learn that when it's painful, or when it's ugly, or when it's anything I don't like, distract myself and I don't have to deal with it. And so to run off and be busy and to be excited and to be going and doing this and doing that and doing this and so involved in everything else is a great distraction to avoid dealing with whatever the problem is, or even the feelings or the pain or the emotions or the self-esteem or whatever is difficult. It's much easier to get excited and distracted.
I have been reading about the subject, and what I read told about the same thing you said, but in a different way. They said the children sometimes fall into 3 categories. First of all is the super achiever, and that's usually the firstborn. for the family. And then there's the one that turns introverted and becomes very shy, and then there's the show out. And the super achiever and the show out are trying to make up for the bad things they have at home. And isn't that what you're trying to say to me? You're trying to cover up, or you're trying to create a new focus.
Children of alcoholics also have so much pressure on them, because often if your parents can't carry out normal tasks, that falls on you. So being an overachiever is something that's just sort of started even before you're old enough. You have to, you know, old enough to be an overachiever, because I talked to my aunt recently, and we have generations of alcoholism in our family back so far that we can't even, you know, can't even figure out when it started. But when she was about six, she was running the house. You know, completely running the house. And that's really common for children of alcoholics.
They're forced into that role to begin with.
Yeah, there's no one else to do it, and it gets down to the kids, so you get up like that.
The origin of the session was a lunch about 2 weeks ago, when I was sitting next to her and introduced myself, and Kathy, who was on the staff, was across the table. She left last weekend, and you started asking me about what do I do and where do I work, and all of a sudden you said, well, I'm a child, you know, a child of an alcoholic, and Kathy jumped in and said, well, so am I, and across the aisle was someone else who's here and said, yes, so am I, and she said, I'm the oldest and I'm the...
I was the second youngest, and I was the one who wouldn't take anything from him. I would yell back and yell back, and Kathy was saying that she was the one who took care of everybody.
And jumped in and kind of took up Mom's slack when Mom was out working, and all of a sudden we had the whole family triangle and all the different pieces, and right over lunch, you remember what the food was that
day? It was wild.
Yeah, it was really crazy. And at that point, we said, we ought to do a session on this. I think there's a lot of interest.
I was the third one there who said, who was the one withdrawn more in my family from the whole situation. So it was really interesting.
Yeah. We all were talking about the different roles and similar experiences.
Thank you. I also do the same thing Rick does. I'm on a chemical treatment place in Vancouver. I think the real danger of what we're talking about is raising is the kid's attitude that they get it. From my own personal experience as a family, my father was the town drunk. And what that causes in your lifetime because of the denial of your father and the feelings of guilt that you have towards your father. I mean, nobody wants everybody in town to say, you know, there's the drunk, you know. And so you deny him. I deny him. You know, I would say, you know, that's not my father, or walk away from him. And I never dealt with those feelings until I was into recovery myself, years into recovery myself. I didn't deal with those problems because I didn't want to deal with them. They hurt too much to deal with. And then once you deal with those problems, once you start dealing with those problems, all the other stuff starts coming out. Because I can remember as a small child saying, I'll never drink again. I'll never drink like my father, you know, I would never do that. And then the first time I drank, and I started drinking with so much guilt that, you know, very shortly I become, you know, alcoholic too. And then you become alcoholic, then when you have children, you understand, well, wait a minute now, what's my children going to think about this? And then you live with that guilt, too, about, you know, what your own children has into it. And I can tell you from, you know, just my own things, and, you know, there's a lot of people here in this room that's from alcoholic families that probably won't say it. But, you know, from what's said to you when you're a child, six, seven, eight, 9 years old, you live with those things the rest of your life. I mean, when they call you stupid and dumb and things like this, you know, the years may go by, but that hurt's still there. And you can, you know, you can go as many years as you want to. That hurt stays with you. It does with me anyway. I shouldn't say with everybody, but it does with me. And the longer that hurt stays with you and you don't deal with it, you know, the harder life is for you. You need to deal with those things. We find that in many cases, our people that's addicted, the people that we come in that we deal with, especially females, a lot of them came out of addictive type families like this, and the rest of the stuff that goes with it, the incest and sexual abuse and all that kind of stuff. It takes years and years of even when they get into their own recovery programs, it takes years to deal with some of that garbage that's brought up in the past. It's just not something that you can... Nobody knew it until a few years ago, 5 years ago, even 10 years ago, when they were treating people. We didn't even think about these things. And now that's the first things that we, you know, we start talking about, the hereditary factors and everything like this.
And the denial, I think, in the children and in the family members is as great as it is in the alcohol.
You don't talk, you don't feel. You can't. I mean, who can you talk to and how can you feel? You can't feel anything because you're taught at home not to feel the night.
Or if you do, sometimes you're hurt and right. You're pulling your shell.
And then you get into the family realms, you know, the kids that play these roles in the alcoholic families. I think it's much more than roles that you play in normal families, well, if there is such a thing.
Sarah?
Well, in my family, my mom has a drinking problem. And
you mean she's alcoholic?
Well, it's a weird situation. It's nothing like anybody's described. So it's hard to say. I don't want to go into all the details. I suppose she is, but it's real different than anybody else's. But anyway, I mean, for all of us kids, and there's six of us, I think all of us have gone, I mean, I can't imagine any of us ever becoming an alcoholic. And I just know myself, I don't ever drink, and I don't care to, and I don't ever look forward to it. It seems surprising that so many kids who grow up in that, who hate it, do become alcoholics, like this person was just saying. Well, do you have any statistics, or do you know about... You know, those people who turn against it so much, maybe it's because I'm afraid that I would become addicted if I did drink, that I don't. I don't know. I just know that I get disgusted with it, and so I don't do it. But
I don't have any numbers.
Are you acquainted with the research going on this? I saw a program on public TV maybe a month ago about there are some researchers who very strongly feel it's a chromosomal deficiency of some type that seems to carry on, and they're thinking if they can isolate that, maybe it can be treated.
Yeah, I saw that same show, I think. there are a lot of people trying to work on the cellular level to identify the cause. The problem is... It's real difficult to separate learning and learned behavior by living in an environment, even from the genetic factors that they may find. And even if you, I think if you're able to identify a genetic factor that predisposes someone to that characteristic, what are you going to do when they grow up in the environment?
I'd like to know, to recovery looks like in Alcoholics Anonymous,
there are
12 steps, and what do the ACAs worked out for themselves?
It's 12 steps, also.
What are they,
what are they? It's the same 12 steps, isn't it?
Yeah. Here's a pamphlet with the minute. Amazing, out of heaven. Yeah. Okay, this one lists some of the same characteristics that I read. It lists some solutions, it says. It lists the 12 steps of AA. Talks about Al-Anon meetings. It talks about ACOA meetings. This is from where? Is this just a general? Some of you like to say a little bit more about ACOA groups and what recovery is like and what's involved.
We as other adults from the group, we do every month, and we do something called a 30-day self-esteem builder. And a lot of times when you come out of a home, you know, kind of what you said, you're told all your life that you're bad or you're dumb or you're stupid or someone's drinking, you know, sometimes their behavior's not real rational. But you grow up believing those things. And so there's a lot of need to really build yourself up and believe in yourself again. So we do like a process like that and then do use the 12 steps. And a lot of it's just having other people there that you can share things with, people who've gone through similar situations. You know, people who are willing to kind of help you dig up some of those old scars and let go of them. You know, it's a real letting go process too. I have another book that I brought too that's called Adult Children of Alcoholics, a workbook for healing. And one of the first things that it says in here is that you have to agree that you'll blame no one for what happened or what has happened in your life. You know, that you cannot say, my father was an alcoholic, and you cannot say everything that happened is his fault. And you have to kind of let that go.
I think the first step of AA or Al-Anon is real important, and it's probably the best place to start. And essentially, I would guess for ACOA, it says, admitted we are powerless over the alcoholic, that our lives have become unmanageable. When you're able to accept and realize that for yourself and how that applies to your life, got a lot of work to do just with that one.
Is there ever any like clarification done from, like, say, the alcoholic to the kids in the home? Is there, does AA ever recommend that or some of the treatment programs? I work with abused kids, and we have a lot of offenders do that for the kids, and I know that's really therapeutic and helpful for the kids. But I always hear when we talk about alcoholics not to blame them. That seems to me it would really help the children of alcoholics to have the alcoholic, sober alcoholic, clarify what they've done, what they're responsible for.
If that's one of the steps, it would probably be helpful to read those steps if they're the same. I don't know, but they're about the same. Yeah, I imagine. But one of the steps in the AA Al-Anon program is to make amends to those that we have harmed, you know.
Eight says, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine said, made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. The 12-step program directly talks about reconciliation when it's healthy and helpful. In our treatment program, in an aftercare portion, we talk about, well, we have couples get together into a couples recovery kind of group and work on that level. And then part of that involves, what do you do in talking with your children and cleaning up the past and seeking forgiveness and getting them into an Alateen group sometimes.
There's COA groups too, children and alcoholic groups that's springing up all over the country. And that's for the younger children of alcoholics. We're finding now that, you know, if you start groups like that when the kids are in the third and fourth grades, that you can really impact them more so if you wait till they, you know. In my case, by the way, you know, until I was 29 to start dealing with those problems, that I worked with them at 8 or 9, there's been a lot of years of, you know, you wouldn't have to carry that garbage with them. So COA groups, the children and alcoholic groups, are becoming real popular. Some of the bigger towns, the littler towns, the Nile's still there.
I had a first grader, I teach school, and one of my first graders went to an Alatat group.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful, and she would tell me a lot of the things that she would learn. It was mostly dealt with feelings. They made mobiles of sad and anger and different feelings that she experienced, and when do you feel sad and when do you feel angry, just to kind of pinpoint the bad feelings, you know, that they're caused because of dad or, you know, or why, but what's happening. And she was only 6, and so, you know, she did get a lot out of it.
One of the main concerns that I have is the whole catch-22 sort of situation where children marry alcoholics when they grow up, or
children marry other children of alcoholics and that kind of thing, risk you. Why does that happen? And then I guess for the TPS, do you find that a concern or a problem?
The question is, why do children of alcoholics grow up and marry alcoholics or marry other children of alcoholics? Does anybody here that from their own experiences want to say something about why or how come?
From what some of the things that I've read, it said that because that person has put down their own self-esteem so low that this is all they can see out there that is good enough for them. Is somebody that they're used to living with, a person who will treat them poorly. And this is the only thing that I could come up with.
Anybody else?
I worked with child abuse too, and at least with child abuse, what we said was that not only do you recreate a situation that's comfortable and familiar to you, I mean, you know how to deal with an alcoholic. If you're growing up in an alcoholic family, it's the same as you know how to deal with an abuser and being a victim if you've been abused as a child. But also there's an idea that if you've got a, you know, if you lived your life with someone that was abusing you in some way because they were an alcoholic or whatever, that you have a desire to make that situation right. And you work through that situation until you get it right. So you just kind of keep trying and keep trying and keep trying. And there are a lot of women that I've dealt with that were abused as children and that were abused again and again in several relationships. And I assume the same thing would be true.
So they had a goal that they didn't have any goal.
But I mean, the denial is so amazing. And not only ourselves, I mean, I remember being a child. For me, it was the abuse was really strong, coupled with the alcohol dependency. And I spent my whole child life telling people that I needed help. And a few people responded by saying, oh, we'll help you. But as soon as they confronted my dad, they split. But the majority of the people just said, oh, you're okay, Karen. It's okay. Come on, it's nothing, you know.
They didn't want to.
Nobody believed me. It wasn't until I was in my, I think I was 21 when the first person actually said, that's terrible. You're kidding, you know. So for 21 years, I thought it was really normal, too.
I think, you know, the partial answer to your question is, if you grew up in that environment, you learn to play the games. You learn to deal with the manipulations and the dishonesty. And you also, like we said here, become victimized and develop the self-esteem struggles and the denial problems. And codependents are heavily under control. And part of the denial also says that because they think they can control, they think they can change. And I think that a lot of people end up marrying alcoholics, first of all, not knowing that they're alcoholic, or maybe they aren't when they marry them. But the personality, the addictive, compulsive personality is there, and that's comfortable. That fits, it seems right, it seems to click. And I think they may have some denial or some control issues going on that say, well, he drinks a little bit, but after we get married, I'm going to get him to quit. And if it begins to get a little bit of a problem, I'll change him. I think one of the major factors is it meshes. It's like what I grew up with. Dealing with an individual who is not an addictive person or not an alcoholic is threatening. Because they want to be straight, they want to be honest, they want to be open, and that's real risky. It's too scary. A dependent person is clammed up, isn't open, isn't always honest, doesn't demand that you be open and transparent, and that's a lot more comfortable and safe.
So it
it's a codependent person who wants to control.
Many times, yeah.
Exactly what you mean by codependent, Rich?
I don't want to dodge that question, but we did an hour last week on it. We got a tape in the library. I'd rather you listen to that first rather than to go and divert the whole session into codependency things. It, real simply, it's a lot of the characteristics that develop similar to what we're talking about here, but often in spouses.
Are there stages of treatment or getting healthy? For adult child alcohol. Denial would be the first stage or the first stage.
We go through the steps that Rich read, those same stages, you know, going through and kind of seeing where you're at and what you're doing. You really work through some of the steps. There's workbooks, there's everything, like the one that you have for children of alcoholics. Just to get a lot of the anger out, you know, and realize that I'm an okay person, you know, get my self-concept back, and it's a long process. But we do go through the steps, and a lot of support systems have a sponsor in our group. I have a sponsor in my group. It's real supportive.
Many of the hospitals have alcohol treatment programs, and they now deal with adult children with alcoholics. One of the programs that they offer is a 10 or 12 week therapy session where you participate with other adult children of alcoholics. And they basically just work on that feeling level of your response to sadness, or they, you know, bring in something, you know, you're talking, you get in touch with those feelings of the child, and then you get familiar with the alcoholic childhood that you have as an adult, and you re-get to know that, and gosh, you see things that, oh man, that's just not going to work, and therefore, you know, you can really heal from that therapy. But that is another part of, you know, in addition to the ACOA meeting, there are those.
What do you look for in terms of support from your friends?
A lot of my friends have parents or family that are alcoholics. And so they know exactly what they're going through. I mean, you know, my best friend's husband is an alcoholic, and I mean, it's just kind of a total support. I think once you open yourself up, like we did at lunch, once you open yourself up, you realize that you're not the only one in this ballgame. I get a lot of support.
I have a good friend who's an adult child alcoholic, and one of the things she tells me is we work on, she asks me how I feel, and I'll tell her how I feel, and she changes the subject right away to a concept, or, you know, takes it right away from the feeling. And so we've kind of worked out a deal where I say, well, you know, I just put some type of confrontation with her, or gently saying, you know, I was feeling this way, and I didn't feel like you're really listening to me, or something like that. She's just, you know, so habitual with her to change kind of, you know, how I feel, how I want to feel. She's really working on that, so it kind of works with her.
You can't afford to feel.
Yeah. Well,
you can't afford to feel because it's just kind of hurt. And yeah. So when somebody says something to you, feeling, you give it something else, you give it some other meaning, or you go off and talk about things, because you don't talk about feeling. You never talk about feeling because it hurts, and it just hurts so much. You know? So it's kind of work.
So I think that one of the biggest issues of support with friends is honesty, trust, and openness.
You understand that it's a disease of denial. Those people probably not going to admit it to start with. You know, you've got to break that first. The whole disease of alcoholism is, you know, it's a disease of denial, and you have to deal with that. And that's very good.
One of my friends is an adult child with alcohol too, and I find one of the
things that seems to be most helpful to her is when I can point out her strong points and her the things that are really good about her. Because for so long, her parents or her father was telling her what was wrong with her. But a person that can point out her strong points and the things that are good about her is very helpful, because her self-esteem is so low.
Yeah. Just to be supportive and affirming.
Which, as we ask, in our company, we regularly send to 175 employees, and we usually have at least two in a treatment center. And usually they get there because of either family abuse or they get thrown in jail for
DWI.
But what we never find out about is what extent the family treatment occurs. Is that regularly part of treating an alcoholic in a treatment center, such as we have in Minnesota, or is that something that has to be initiated beyond the treatment of the alcoholic himself?
Well, my experience is that family treatment varies with programs. Some programs have none, and on the other end of the extreme is that some programs won't admit somebody to treatment without family members involved. It's a prerequisite for admission. And then I would guess that there's that experience all the way in between, that it's voluntary, that it's one night a week for 2 weeks, or that it's daily for, like at Hazelden and Center City, it's a week program. They come for 7 days, live there, and spend, 7 days of intensive education.
That's the spouse and family?
Yep.
Spend 7 days?
Yep. But again, it varies too, because some family treatment is simply education. Others is therapy and treatment. And so I don't think there's much of a standard at all in what's done with family members.
I guess the experience I've had is we sometimes have contact with the spouse, and we send somebody like usually the third time, and the third time they've gone through the 6 week training program, we usually terminate them. Mm-hmm. But we find in that process that oftentimes the spouse is always coming in and apologizing and enabling that situation to continue to occur.
How often in the first two times through treatment did the spouse or family members get involved in family treatment?
I don't know. That's why I was asking the question. If that's a regular part of treatment. I know that we as an employer are involved in the treatment program as far as confronting the employee and that part of it.
Intervention and referral.
And sometimes we go down there with the spouse, but other times they're not involved. Yeah. But up front, I guess.
I think the only answer to that for you is to go to the treatment centers where your people go and find out what their family programs are. And it may be a real valuable thing to research the different treatment programs around you, find out what their family programs are, find out which ones you think are really valuable programs, and then tend to channel your people that direction. Our program in Cambridge, it has an almost mandatory requirement that at least one family member go through codependency treatment in order for an individual to come into treatment. And our codependency program is as long and as stringent and as much time, but separate, as the chemical dependency treatment program is.
So do you have that kind of commitment up front then when the person is initially enrolled that this will be part of the program?
That's their ticket in.
Are the people treated on an outpatient basis?
Yeah, this is outpatient treatment.
I've been hearing a lot about alcoholic fathers. Are there many alcoholic mothers or fewer? Do you have any idea?
What?
Just
as many.
Yeah, I think there's just as many. Difficulty is that they're much tougher to flush out of the bushes, they're much tougher to discover, they're much more deeply hidden. At least in Minnesota, one of the factors that flushes people out of the bushes that need, you know, because they've got a disease and need treatment is getting stopped by the highway patrolman and getting a DWI.
Or else missing work.
Yeah.
Not showing up at work.
But often they'll come to work half, you know, totally hungover because that's where your bread and butter and money comes from. But you get caught on the highway intoxicated by a DWI, your wife might be sitting here drunk too, but he gets caught. We need to quit, I guess. I think we're we need to wrap it up in time for church. I just want to say quickly, I have a number of books that I brought along. Pam has her book. If anybody wants to look at them, there are a lot of things published about the topic, a lot of information worth reading, and my hunch is 90% of this room is closely involved at some point in your life with somebody who's chemically dependent. Thank you for coming.